You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, for another version of On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, and that's me, Dr. Michelle Cohen. So nice to have you all here with me today. As always, I have a fabulous guest, and we're going to be talking about one of my favorite subjects, which has to do with quantum consciousness, NDEs, near-death experiences, and other things that we can learn from people who have had these experiences and can inspire us about what's really going on in the unseen and many other lessons that we can learn today. So that's what we're talking about. If you've checked out the social media, I shared with you that we're speaking with one of my favorite people, Jacob Cooper. He's a licensed psychotherapist, and he's written this book for us to share today. I always work with a glare here on all my goofy lights. It's Life After Breath. All right. And what this book does is it sort of takes us on a mystical journey. It's the real deal. You know, Jacob is a licensed psychotherapist, LCSW. He has lots of patients. We were just talking about that. And, you know, he really heals people from not only, and we'll have him explain this to you, but a lot of, you know, psychoanalytics, psychodynamics, you know, going back to early times. Also, you know, from his spiritual awakening teachings as well, he heals people. So, you know, what Jacob is going to tell us about, and I know you see him here with me, is about, you know, death. And we're all sort of like wondering about it. Many of us, and I know you listeners and viewers, have really read a lot and learned a lot about NDEs, or, you know, people who describe what we say mystical experiences. And it really changes everything. I think that's one of the most common fears that many people and many of my patients, and I'm sure Jacob's as well, are experiencing. But I'm going to let him tell you more about it. But in his near-death experiences, he really was ripped into the spirit world. I mean, how do you do that? He's going to describe that. And he actually literally was out of breath and had this near-death experience, went out of his body. He's going to share this with us. And he went through an amazing journey. He had guides there. He learned so much. Went into the Akashic Records, and really, for being such a young man at 30 years old and accomplishing so much and being such an inspirational teacher to so many people, what he's experienced will blow your mind. So we're going to talk about that right now. Jacob, welcome to the show. So nice to have you with us.
Thank you so much, Dr. Michelle. It's a true pleasure to be here with you here this afternoon. Thank you.
Yeah, that's right. It is. We're live all over the world here. So wherever you're joining us, thanks for coming along. I just want to know, let me just describe also some of the things you do. You're a clinical social worker, certified Reiki master. Man, that takes a lot of years to learn. Certified hypnotherapist. And now you're specializing in past life regression therapy. And you also work privately with clients through online services. And, of course, we're dealing with that, of course, with the pandemic. And again, inspired by your near-death experience and transformative encounter, you are facilitating spiritual awareness for your patients as well, and empowerment through a lot of life-changing seminars. You've done a lot of amazing seminars to help people too. So I'm blown away. Can you share some of that work that you've done with people and your seminars?
Yeah, you know, most recently with the pandemic, I think there's beauty in almost anything if you look closely enough. And what I found, certainly, you know, with just sitting in front of a camera, you're able to, I'm at least able to reach a lot of people that I probably wouldn't have if I didn't have that camera on. You just shut it off and you go to sleep a couple of minutes later. But, you know, some of the most honored populations that I've been privileged to work with during the pandemic were people that were very isolated, populations that were isolated, such as the aged populations. I've worked with colleges and senior programs for the aged population, as well as breast cancer programs affiliated with my own alma mater of Adelphi University. Yeah. I've been doing that for the last couple of years. And so early on the pandemic, that was a big drive of mine, is to do as many Zoom workshops as I could with vulnerable, marginalized, isolated populations who needed more resources and skills to navigate, you know, these times. So I did mindfulness workshops. I have a Reiki workshop coming up, you know, with the, you know, aged population. So it's quite humbling to be able to do all these things, thanks to advancements of technology, and reach the hearts and minds of so many.
You know? That's beautiful. And I know I feel the same way. I feel blessed to be able to, you know, through the technology, be able to reach out to people as well. So that's amazing what you're doing. And we're going to be talking about, you know, you learning traditional psychology, psychotherapy techniques, and how you sort of incorporated that into the natural healing arts. And, you know, also because of your NDE, your near-death experience. So again, check this book out, guys. Life After Breath. All right. All right. It's actually how a brush with fatality gave him a glimpse of immortality. So we're going to talk about that right now. And what I know, I mean, it's kind of a rhetorical question, but what were some of the things that really inspired you to put this down all on paper and publish
it? Yeah, so many different angles, you know, were impetuses and drives behind it. But I tried to speed it up with the given time. There's so much symmetry and parallels with my own upper respiratory, highly contagious virus of whooping cough that led to my own suffocation and what happened a year ago today throughout the world. And it wasn't self-aggrandizing to try to do, but I tried to give back, you know, breath and life, much like I was given when I was suffocated. And I think that was, and I'm sure you could attest to this, a common thing with people just feeling directly or indirectly out of sorts, out of breath, out of whack, and their foundation was taken from them. And I wanted, in my own way, to give back a restorative breath to people through reading this, you know, piece of work. But, you know, many others, I think. I wanted to dedicate it to all the people around me that didn't have books, that could have had, people who I know just held themselves back from not telling the story, was a part of it. And it was just kind of like a homage to all those that came before me, as I saw this book as not something that came from me, but rather through me. And it was just a debt of gratitude to a lot of different, you know, characters that you see that's also mentioned within the book, you know,
yes,
as an ode to them. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I love that you did this. And, you know, you have so many accolades. Also, the foreword is written by one of our mutual friends, my girl sister from another mother, the famous psychologist, Dr. Sharon Prentice. She came on the show several times talking about her book, Becoming Starlight, and her shared death experience that she had, you know, with her late husband. And also a lot of the accolades that were given to you. Raymond Moody, come on, man. That, I mean, blew me away. And all of the other people, you know, who were in praise of your book, and we can talk about those individuals as well. But you did well. It's beautiful.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Absolutely. Getting Anita Morjani, she's a New York Times bestseller. Yes. Just had her birthday a couple of days ago, and she's got a new book coming out, but she's got enough help. I don't need to market that, but she's wonderful.
Oh, gee.
You know, after I spoke one time, a woman said to me, you're wonderful, but you should listen to Anita speak. She is amazing. And after that, she was kind of like my Mount Rushmore.
There you go.
And so to have her endorse my book was a full circle moment.
Oh, I know. I bet it was. I mean, that's really awesome. And I mean, so many of the other people who I would like to share as well, you know, Yvonne Carson, MD, Pat Longo, spiritual healer, Joyce Keller, Seven Steps to Heaven. Really? All these wonderful people are saying in praise.
Suzanne Gieselman was one of my biggest honors. She was a former Navy senior officer, and she's a world-renowned intuitive medium teacher. She worked under different president administrations in the Pentagon, and she turned her career over to now an intuitive. I'm going to be on her show in a couple of weeks, too. So,
wonderful.
If you ask me, I can't put them in order, but Suzanne really, that hits home with her dedicated to service to our country.
Oh, absolutely. She's amazing, too. And Well, you manifested it all, so there you go.
Thank you.
So you were 5 years old. Let's jump into your near-death experience and how that affected you. You were suffering from whooping cough, which is, frightening. Literally, you can't breathe, and you lose consciousness. You were playing in the play yard, right?
Yeah. Yes, I went to a playground with family friends and my sibling at the age of 3 years old. It was September of 1993. Wow. It was right before the Jewish high holiday of Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, where we made our Creator for a day of health, well-being, and prosperity if we clean our sins. And lo and behold, I was meeting a much different, diametrically opposite version of the Creator in my NDE, that I met. But yes, I was in a playground climbing up on a ladder to a slide, and I suffocated at the top of the ladder, hence the name Jacob and ladder and the playground. There's so many spin-offs that you could have, and just ties, and parallels with the experience. So
that's amazing. So here you go. You can't breathe. You literally almost faint or fall, and you are in near death, basically. So what happened? How was this in your experiences?
I don't mean to sugarcoat it. I don't think from that experience that I fear what's after the other side. You know, death to me, I know we're continuing, but the process, was traumatizing. Suffocating was not fun. Having all my organs that I know that weren't functioning was not fun. And just being in this weird place where you're neither here nor there, you're just in the place between here and there. Mm-hmm. It was just this weird incubation place that I was in, mm-hmm. where my body wasn't functioning. I wasn't yet crossed over, to the other side. And that to me was one of the scariest, most traumatic, most isolating experiences that I could have. And I don't wish that on anyone. But to come to the other side of that was the exact opposite. And so it's kind of like a double-edged sword, the way that I look at it, which, that's just being totally honest. And, it had a little bit of everything in it, so.
Right. Yeah. And we'll talk about that. And what was cool in your book is that you described your near-death experience as feeling so familiar. I've been here before, right? Yeah. I mean, can you say why you expressed that? And also just share us a little bit about your journey that you went through.
Yeah, when I was going there, it was an embarrassment, I would say, with how much I forgot about that and how close to my own being that all was within my own backyard. And, I just felt, a little bit embarrassed with how I just forgot about all this and how it was just so close to the surface of my own being. And there was a familiarity, like a sense that I know what was going on and know that I'd been there. Yeah. There's still a part of myself that was overwhelmed or even, there's different parts of ourselves. Part of myself was just so overwhelmed, just challenging myself. Is this my dreaming? Is this real? Then another part was able to disvalidate that, and say that, no, that this is familiar. You've been here before. So I was going through a lot of different progressions.
Sure. Yeah. And I mean, and in your book also, you describe how, different people, depending on, whatever sometimes their belief system is, which is fascinating to me, we'll talk about a little bit too, because of your religious upbringings. And then you had some Christ consciousness going on there, which I went, huh? Oh, well, we'll talk about that. But also, a lot of people have similar but also different experiences that are based sort of on what their orientation in life is, or what their family heritage or upbringing is. So do you think that any of your experiences were based on your Orthodox Jewish religion, or how did that affect you when you went into the abyss of the
I would say one had nothing to do with the other. I think, if you look at all religions and you burn away a lot of the rituals and laws and stuff like that, at the core is common spiritual principles within it. And, you know, for instance, Christianity speaks about reincarnation.
Right.
It wasn't until 200 or 300 AD in the Council of Constantinople or something like that where that was banned. But that was taught in Jewish traditions and mysticism and Kabbalistic teachings. You know, they speak about past lives, and there's talks about the Tarot in there, and all the stuff that we do in the occult is deeply rooted within Kabbalistic teachings. Mm-hmm. But the conventional Judaism that I'm sure my family practice and stuff like that was a lot drier. It was more, you know, ritualistic basis and stuff like that. And so it was much different. And so certainly having an encounter with, you know, a Christ consciousness, which was different than actually seeing Jesus in front of me.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't kind of like the Jesus that's depicted in many communities where that was kind of born in a Chick-fil-A somewhere. You know, this was, you know, a much different interpretation,
right,
you know, than Jesus that I was,
yeah,
you know, that we're taught. And
yeah,
it was the personalized connection, you know, that went far greater than, you know, this reality.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what I had. You know.
Oh, that's beautiful. And of course, you know, if you guys, you know, a lot of my, you know, listeners and viewers have, you know, they've checked out a lot of the teachings of, you know, the Hebrew Essenes, of which Jesus's family and his brothers and sisters, they were all members of. And of course, the last Gospel of Thomas, you know, his brother supposedly wrote that. And there's stuff that was left out of the traditional New Testament and things like that. I mean, there's so, it's just like you said, it's all love. It's all ascension of being into a higher, whatever you want to talk about it, vibration or the field or something like that, whatever we all want to call it. But there is a consciousness that we would say a Christ consciousness, you know, like you said.
Yes, that was the exact interpretation. It was a sensation and an energy and a vibration that I experienced that was beyond, you know, physical body, that was beyond, it was just, you know, pitch. And I firmly believe that is who we all are, just expressions and vibrations. And we get out of this body, we do have form, but we're just expressions. You know, in each and every lifetime, we reincarnate and become hopefully a higher version of that vibrational self, you know. And so,
hopefully. And you and I talked, you know, when we chatted briefly a while back, you know, about this, you know, coming back and things like that. We chatted about I was binging on Dolores Cannon, you know, lectures and things like that.
Yeah.
And she has learned, and through her past life regressions of people, she said, "I'm just the messenger. I'm just telling you what they're telling me," when she regresses them back past, you know, their life and into their past lives and whatever through the death process or whatever. She says, you know, we have to come back to learn lessons. This earth is a really very hard school.
Yeah.
We have to learn these lessons. Do you agree with that? You know, I mean, what did you sort of learn when you came back down, you know, into a 3D, you know, linear dimension back in your body? And I know you were scared, and I would have been very scared. You know, the doctor's standing there and you're like, oh, this little guy, that's just horrible.
Right. It was a major transition, to say the least. The goldfish was just thrown into the cold water, and I was just, it was a big shock. I couldn't think of things more different than being in the angelic realm, being on the other side, and then waking up on a cold hospital bed, you know, at the age of 3. Adults struggle to find a verbiage or a lexicon to describe their experience. And so certainly there was this, you know, different inner knowing or inner sensation, but I couldn't outerly express it. And I knew at the time, you know, and so I would say to survive, I needed to put that beach ball under the water for a bit of time, you know, and to be in this world, I really had to bury it in my own way and find, and I talk about this in Life After Breath, I needed to quote unquote ground myself, and sports was a big way to do it. And, but, you know, obviously having this, my brain was much different. I view the brain as just a filter of consciousness between the two worlds. And once my brain was deprived of oxygen and cracked open, that's when God came in, as the saying happens. And so it was a lot more open, and I was more of a, we say a dreamer, but I was channeling a lot. But in order for myself to survive, I needed to bury that. But later in life, in order to thrive, I needed to own that. And so that's what I would say is, you know, I needed to learn to be in this body. And then once I got to a certain age, I was able to learn how to bring that back into my life. And that was a part of purpose, you know, but it took some time to integrate.
Yeah, I bet it did. And very traumatic, especially, I mean, 3 years old. I barely remember. I have flashbulb moments when I was 3 years old of little parties or being with relatives or whatever, high holidays, things like that, you know, but that's about it, you know. But the fact that, you know, like you said, you had to recall a lot of these memories and things. In case you just tuned in, guys, you're here on the couch with me, Dr. Michelle Kuhn. We're talking to my special guest here, Life After Breath author, Jacob Cooper. He's talking about how a brush with fatality gave him a glimpse of immortality. And we've talked about a lot of individuals who've experienced near death, or NDEs, as we call them. Was your experience similar to that of Evan Alexander's? I mean, you know, he described the light and then going into this paradise and seeing colors like he'd never seen before, gardens and, you know, angelic beings flying around. What was that like for you?
I would say somewhat. I mean, I know I read Proof of Heaven years ago. I mean, I would say, though, the similarities was that period of nothingness that he experienced. You know, I think he contracted bacterial meningitis and was in a coma. Mm-hmm. And so he had that for a longer period of time, but that intense suffering, you know, of nothingness, or just at the abyss of life that you could experience, that he chronicles in his book. You know, I had a little bit of a similarity when I suffocated and just feeling this intense abyss sensation. But yes, I mean, that euphoric sensation. You know, different. Again, you know, this man is a Harvard neurosurgeon. You know, midlife, he has this. And, you know, for me, at 3 years old, you know, I know there's different researchers who specialize in childhood and near, you know, infant and childhood near-death experiences. One of the researchers' name is P.M.H. Atwater. You know, she's been doing this for years. And, you know, and she speaks about, you know, this, and I think she herself had one as a child or an infant. But, you know, NDEs are becoming more mainstream and more, you know, obviously Surviving Death. If you've watched that, I highly recommend it on Netflix. You know, really made that more broad based. Yeah. But the niche market of infant and childhood near death experiencers are not as vast. And so I'm hoping that when people could read my book, you know, it might allow them to take ownership of their experience and to validate it, much like I was validated when I read Betty Ady's Embraced by the Light, and that gave me a language of my experience. So that's the hope.
Yes,
and a byproduct.
Yeah. Isn't that wonderful when, you know, somebody really has the language and you say, oh my gosh, you connect with it. You say, that's exactly what I was feeling. That's exactly right, you know.
Yeah, language, you know, as we know as therapists, reading Betty's book was a double-edged sword. On one hand, I, you know, was a little bit angered in a sense that you have this experience and you think you're so special.
Right.
And then all of a sudden someone else has it and you learn other people had it. And so part of when you hide something is that it's so sacred. You keep it. I kept it so close to my heart. Yeah. And so when other people had it, it took away, you know, some of the sacredness of the NDE. But that also allowed a great catharsis and a great release to have the universality of other people who had it, you know, which is very validating. Wow. So, but yes, as therapists, you know, we give clients a diagnosis. For some, you know, it could be, you know, could open up the whole world. And, you know, others might feel limited by it. And so I always say it's just a piece of you. It's not the totality of you.
So, oh, that's beautifully said. Exactly. You had a couple of, you said, spirit guides. Now, when a lot of people hear that, you know, they go, right. But a few of you, again, are our teacher, the late, great Dolores Cannon, she said, we all have some kind of guides who are helping us along in our lifetimes. These are just beings on the other side in the quantum field or whatever. They're just coming through and they're saying, hey, I'm here. It's all cool. So can you describe?
Oh, yes, absolutely. In my near-death experience, I speak about this, how my guides actually pushed my body down the slide and I felt their presence with me on the two sides of me. Mm-hmm. At the time, I knew their names cold. I knew their identities, their faces, and they were the most beautiful beings that I could ever describe. But what I would say is, before we come into this lifetime, there's a charting phase, there's a planning phase, there's a pre-birth phase, and that is done by an intelligence far greater than our own. And our spirit guides are very prominent in that charting phase, with different paths, different families to choose, different cultures to live in. And it's all a part of what our soul, not that it wants, but what it needs to progress. Ooh. And so, you know, these guides are around us at all times. And again, you know, that's something that I expressed in Life After Breath, was the embarrassment that I forgot that they were always around me. While at the same time, feeling quite transparent and vulnerable that, you know, they were with me even when I took a shower, whatever, you know, just the transparency, you know, of it all. And just how we forget that we're on record at all times, you know, that this life has a record button. And I know a lot of, you know, young kids are used to that from taking selfies all day. But on the other side, their green button is on at all times. You know, we're always on record from those in the satellites in the heavens watching, you know, this. And so what I learned was the lack of randomness, you know, the divine orchestration with an intelligence far greater than my own. And that this lifetime wasn't just a human thing, but it was a spiritual thing. You know, there was a DNA to it, and there was a place that went far beyond this body, these parents, this culture that I was connected to at all times that I forgot about.
Yes, we are all one in that, and, you know, learning that. And it's what it is, of course, as you say, it comes down to love. It comes down to connection. And that's why you're a healer. I mean, I know you've been there, and you know how to reach out and heal others through the Reiki, you know, training that you've received, and also the regression hypnotherapy, general hypnotherapy that you do. And so, I mean, that, can you talk a little bit about that hypnotherapy that you practice? And, you talk about healing. Past life regression.
Sure.
Yes, in your healing process.
Yeah. Well, you know, with the healing component, you know, what I would say is that the near-death experience is my ultimate framework for everything that I built my life off of. And seeing all the angels in front of me and seeing the light that they showed, as well as the loved from loved ones on the other side, and how they look at you so much differently than other people in your life see you, or you see yourself. They see you 20 steps differently than you see yourself. And so part of that was to give that back to people, and to have people to see themselves differently, and to see themselves through the eyes and lens of those on the other side and your angels. Because ultimately, if you're able to see yourself with curiosity and an openness and an acceptance and an unconditional component, that translates to how you interact and engage with other people. And if we could do that, I do believe the soul seeks to unify, not to divide. We could come to a place where the me is intertwined with the we, and this is more of a cohesive, cooperative, rather than a competitive, you know, life. But within hypnosis, again, a lot of that was inner child work, where I speak about this in Life After Breath. Not only did I had the you could call them past lives, but I think it's just one lifetime. You know, I don't think it's separate, but for practical left brain standpoint, I'll say the term past lives. I had a lot of past life recollections, and, you know, one of them was a constant trauma, which I speak of in Life After Breath. Yes. But in the way, I tried to get involved in hypnosis and past lives from what I experienced in my NDE, which was the subconscious mind, and how much was truly there that we forgot. Yeah. And ultimately, you know, I think truly part of the issue is our identity is synonymous with what we've been taught and what we've been deprogrammed to accept. Mm-hmm. And I think people getting past that into the deeper waters of identity leads to them seeing themselves past this small chapter and page of the book, and to be opened and aware of different chapters and different pages, so that we could perfect our drafts as we go into the subject.
So our lives are predestined. I mean, we have free will. you know, in these bodies and these minds and everything like that. So, some people say we make agreements, you know, on the previous, what you were just talking about, when we write the scripts and we have the actors and the players and how we're going to live, like the agreements we have with others before we come into these bodies, supposedly. And, but we do have free will to make different choices. And because that is the gift we have as human beings, as we get to alter our thought processes and our manifestations, right? So it's not predestined, like, okay, you know, you have this whole script written and in the Akashic Record, this is what's going to go down, and you're just doing this life and do the best you can.
Oh, yeah. You know, I think there's a certain element to fate, but what would be the point of being in this body in this lifetime if we had no free will, if we had, mm-hmm. if we didn't have the power of choice? What would be the point of doing it? And so, I certainly think different lifetime events, you know, some would call profound moments, you know, in their own way, they might be charted. At times, if we go off of that, they might come in different forms. But absolutely, we do have free will. We do have the capacity to choose, you know, our own destiny and even surpass, you know, in a way what we didn't even dream in our wildest dreams before we got here on the planet. So.
Yes. Absolutely. So after having your NDE, excuse me, you've had what's called everlasting soul consciousness, as you describe in your book. So what does that mean for you that you can teach us that you do on a daily basis?
Yeah, I think the part of what I learned was the multidimensional component of ourselves. And, you know, people ask me, you're 3 years old, who and what was having this experience,
yeah.
looking back at it. Right. And I would say what I learned is you have the body, you have our temporary age, we have our, the part of ourselves that sees herself in this moment, and we have a broader part of ourselves that surpasses this body, surpasses this age, surpasses this even lifetime,
right.
beyond the surface of the water. And so that I could best describe as the soul or the sacred observer. And so I certainly think that how we view ourselves will ultimately inform how we, you know, view this lifetime. And if we view ourselves as a body, we just want more material things. If we view ourselves as a soul, we want to connect. Mm-hmm. We want to spread. We want to unify. We want to bring truth, you know, to we want to bring the infinite into the finite. And so what I learned is the value of the soul. And I try to incorporate that as much as I can, you know, because I think when people are able to do that, they're able to truly live out not just their life's purpose, but their soul's purpose, their soul's urge. And I think that's a very important voice to listen to and to tune into on a regular basis. You know,
absolutely. It really is. So how would we do that? I mean, there's a lot of people who, you know, just check, you know, my email hooked up here to the show, straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. I'm getting some questions coming in. They're saying, ask Jacob. How do I learn without having a near-death experience to get in touch with my higher consciousness?
Yeah. Well, I would say, as cliche as this sounds, you know, meditation is the greatest rapport-building exercise that you could have with the infinite, with eternity. And so the good news is you don't have to have all the unresolved trauma and suffocations. You don't have to lose your body to find your soul. You don't have to lose your body to understand that we don't die. And so what I experienced in my NDE was something in a way similar that I have in meditation. In a sense, when you meditate, you know, you close your eyes, you get past the thought, past the emotion, and there's this sacred observer of yourself, the observer of life. And in a way, it would almost be impossible to imagine that not continuing.
Right.
Just know that that's a non-tangibilized part of yourself. That is a part that you know is just past this body, past this brain, past these thoughts, past this reality. And so I think the deeper you get in tune with that, you know, you become more intimate and more understanding of your own eternity, of the infinite within. And then from doing that, you're able to broaden your mind's eye to different realities at hand. And some might call that psychic phenomenon, interdimensional communication with loved ones, or an openness. But the biggest measure is to find spirituality with practicality. See, if you have all these climactical experiences, and if you don't make them to practical use, then they're nice euphoric experiences, but they don't, they're not grounded. And so I think the most important significant part is to learn how could I make this useful and resourceful to myself and to other people.
Exactly. And that's a beautiful way of, you know, phrasing it. How can I become a higher conscious being? And so you suggest people perhaps, you know, utilize some type of meditative technique every day in order to just, you know, get in touch with their higher self as the observer, right?
And I do think that, you know, and as well as using the body to set ourselves free. I think the body and the brain are the filters between the two worlds. And so when they're open, you know, I do think the doorway to the infinite is allowed to feel present within our body. And we could feel our own field, our own energy, and we could learn how to balance it. And the more tangible the intangible becomes, the more aware that we are of our own energy and different ways to manage it. Much like we wouldn't go out of our home, not showering, not shaving, not using mouthwash, we understand the ramifications of that. Obviously, the same way when we leave our own homes in the energy that we omit and what we're holding on to, and the understanding that just as we have that, we have the ability to also release it. But through awareness, you know, we could change.
Oh, that's really beautiful. And also through your Reiki healing, you also help eliminate a lot of that energy, you know, that may be around someone and just sort of, right? And we can talk about that process in just a little bit.
Yes.
Yeah, if you just tuned in here, guys, you're on the couch. Dr. Michelle Cohen here and my special guest, Jacob Cooper. He's a psychotherapist and author of his latest book, Life After Death. He had an NDE that changed his whole life in trying to make sense of it and, you know, discovered his own gifts, you know, through that as well. And, you know, a lot of that had to do with who you are as a soul being and your compassion for other people. You know, you went through a lot of stuff growing up, and I know you had your own share of anxiety and, you know, some depression, but a lot of anxiety. And, you know, it was tough being you as a little guy. You know, I understand on your journey.
It was, you know, I had all the right circumstances. You know, I had, you know, all the basic needs met. But internally, you know, this experience undoubtedly was a double-edged sword.
Yes. Exactly. Double-edged sword is right. But I guess we learn through pain, and that's the only way we learn is through, you know, negative or whatever, the suffering. Because, you know, as Esther Hicks says, of course, you don't know what you want unless you know what you don't want.
Right.
So, you know, I guess that's, you know, what it's all about. So meditation would be a wonderful way, you know, to get into that. No, and baby steps of learning it. A lot of people say, I can't meditate. I have a high beta consciousness going on all the time and I can't slow my brain down. It's like, okay, let's work with that. And really sometimes it helps to do the guided meditation with someone else talking you down.
Right.
And there's lots of
that. Well, I like to use almost paradoxical approaches to meet clients' needs, where in a sense, if you're going 100 miles an hour, it's very hard to just put your brake on and go to zero. Yeah. So I like the snow globe analogy where if you're having a lot of those thoughts, you know, almost kind of resetting the brain, like we do like with shock treatment and stuff like that, but rebooting it, much like when your computer is froze, so that you could come back to center. And so I do a lot of what's called brainwave vibration, or just kind of shaking your head or getting very active so that you could get rid of a lot of that, you know, unchanneled, stagnant energy that is really getting in your way to get back into stasis a little bit easier.
Yeah. Right. It's almost like exposure therapy, as we call it.
Movement, energy movement, energy meditation, walking meditation. Those are very good for people who feel quite amplified, to be aware of not just the routine doing, but rather the presence of the being within the doing.
Beautifully said. So also in your book, and I don't want to tell the story because I don't
my sales are going to drop like 1,000 rankings from everyone hearing every word of it.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But excuse me, one of the issues, I don't have COVID, I promise. I just
<that's wrong. laughs> allergies. It's times.
Yeah. Oh my goodness, yes. Here on the West Coast, it's crazy right now. Spring has sprung, but one of the lessons that you share in your book, you know, I was reading about it, says, watch your thoughts as your thoughts are the highways that will lead you to trust your inner power, which will flow toward your life's path, truth, and purpose. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
People ask me all the time, did that come from you? I go, none of this stuff comes from us. It comes through us. And that was the information. Like I said, an intelligence far greater than myself today, certainly 3-year-old self. But that came in moments where not only I was aware of different lifetimes, but also the life path that I would live and, you know, the healer that I become and the speaker and the teacher, and just this insane doubt where, in a sense, to turn down heaven, I wanted guarantees that this life was worthwhile. Because as you said before, you know, this earth is very challenging. And so I wanted a security blanket that all would be well, that it would all work out. And so, you know, I think just the power of thought, you know, like you said, and how that has a free will. Ultimately, when we have higher vibratory thoughts, we're able to be flow ready with the life that was charted before us. Now, if we have thoughts that are based in fears, you know, anxiety, you know, all that kind of stuff, we start to give a lot of power over to the negativity versus entrusting the path that was birthed into us far, far beyond this body. And I think that certainly was a lesson that I learned, is obviously past the thought was the power of trusting an infinite source of wisdom that I was connected to, far beyond this body and circumstances. And so to be able to be more objective and broad-based with how I saw life and not as short-sighted with events, and to give power over to different events, you know, to put more power into faith over fear. So, yeah.
No, I love that answer. And it really makes so much sense, you know, not to get into the quantum consciousness stuff, but I mean, you know, that which we think, whatever you want to call it, a vibratory frequency of our thoughts, no judgment about good or bad or fear or anxiety or hate or no judgment. We have to go through all those thoughts. We have to experience them in order to learn. But if we can try to keep ourselves on a supposed or whatever, you know, higher level of kindness, of giving, of being okay, as you said, by trusting in that higher consciousness, or by trusting in, you know, whatever is out there, we'll have a much, you know, better go of it. And that's sort of like therapy anyway. I mean, knowing it's really all okay, chill. It helps with a lot of the anxiety issues that we all have to deal with, and depression that we're dealing with in the linear plane that we're dealing with. You know, it's like, I can't live in, I know I'm going to pass on and it's going to be amazing. I know, you know, we have to be here now. We chose to, you know, experience this third dimensional thing. But I mean, like you said, you combine, you know, both in your daily practice.
For sure. Yeah. No one's immune from the human condition. You know, end of years, mediums, psychics, we all get offset. We all get, you know, triggered, upset, doubt, you know, just feel like, you know, there's no hope in sight. Everyone goes through that. That's very normal. So this isn't the process of being perfect. We're human beings, but it's the process of allowing ourselves to utilize those mistakes as a part of being human to become more humane.
Yes.
You know, and to evolve from being offset to make ourselves rise above those, you know, those dark moments.
Yes, exactly. And what would you say, and because of your experience as well, when you were so young and your health issues, what would you say to people who are struggling every day with health issues and pain and, you know, are in that sort of negative loop, which is normal? I mean, oh my gosh, this is scary. I don't like feeling, this is no fun being in this body. And what would you say to a lot of patients who have serious illnesses, the folks you work with?
Yeah, I would say the value of being natural with your emotions. I think so many times, you know, in our society with hedonism, pleasure seeking, you know, the whole Disney World mentality, we want climactical experiences at all times. And we have a diametrically different experience where we have health issues and we have loss of control. It's very easy to feel quite frustrated because that is, you know, at least in our culture, very different than what is expected. I think it's important to be able to go through your progressions to, if you are able to, develop, you know, almost kind of like an angry letter and to get that out there. Because what I would say is when you have a wound, you don't just say, okay, I'm going to have dinner, I'm going to deflect, I'm going to distract myself. I think the wound is healed by going to it. And not only when you go to it, you're able to go through it. And so the allegorical reference of the suffocation of my NDE, yes, you know, pain is real, and that could be felt. But behind that is eternity. Behind that is the knowingness, you know, that there's an infinite light inside of us. And so how many people do we know that have life-altering experiences without the yin and the yang of that? And so I think it's important for people to go through the dark, but to remind themselves that they're able to see the stars too by looking past the darkness. And through that experience, they could really heal themselves and to become a lot deeper, more compassionate, and more change had they not had that experience. And how many changes have happened when we were just chilling on the poolside in our lifetimes, right? Most of it happens when the rug is being pulled, know, and we have a shakeup period in our lifetimes. On the other side of that, we're birthed with, you know, and, you know, hopefully a new profound outlook at life and a difference of life. But I think it's very important to meet, for people to be where they're at step by step on their own healing journeys.
Right. And experience it and be aware of it and take those baby steps into that and, you know, loving that which we are, you know, basically. And you know, suppression and, you know, is one of the most common ways of and denial of not dealing with trauma and things like that. But if we can unravel ourselves to just slowly unpack some of the trauma and the pain and, you know, reality. Whatever we're dealing with at the time, to be in a higher place and have hope. Hope is what it's about,
right?
You know, as well, and you certainly give that to people in your book, Jacob Cooper, LCSW, and also psychotherapist, Life After Breath. Pick it up; really easy to get, of course, Amazon as well. And God, it's getting about that time. I knew our time would go fast, Jay. What is your website? What's the best way folks can find out more about you too and what you do?
Oh, sure. So my website is jacoblcooper.com, jacoblcooper.com. And the L is for my middle name. It's Lieb or Labe, which in the Hebrew vernacular means heart.
There you go.
And so I try to live my life heart-centered and as much as I can. So if anyone has any questions or any services or they have a question about our interview, by all means, you know, feel free to make yourself at home.
Right. Beautifully said. Thank you so much for being on the couch today, Jacob. It's so nice to have you.
It was a true honor. Thank you for all that you do. And it was a true blessing to be on your program. And, you know, thank you, listeners, for giving this time, you know, in your day. And I hope some of this content, you know, uplifted, you know, your lives in some degree. Thank you.
Oh, you're so welcome. Believe me, it did.
Thank you.
All right. Okay, everybody, if you missed a little bit of the show and this interview, you can check us out. Of course, we'll be on our Facebook page here on LA Talk Radio. Check that out. And also latalkradio.com. I'm on Channel 1. Just pull up my webpage on The Couch with Dr. Michelle. And, of course, you can listen, download, replay all of the reruns. So thanks for joining me. And as I always say, do take care of yourself first. And you'll be great for others. And that's the way it works in the world. Have a good one.
Bye. You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.